take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, December 11th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the weekend. Glad you could make it here. It's kind of cold and wet and rainy in Portland, Oregon, but it is a beautiful day in one respect, and that is today. Today is actually show number 700 of the Russ Belville Show. That's right, show number 700. Hard to believe we've gotten that far here, but it is true, and thank you everybody who've helped make this possible. We've got 208 shows to go. At least that many to go, because I swore that I would do more episodes of the Russ Belville Show independently than I did when I worked for Normal. And I did 908 episodes for Normal, so we've got 208 to go. That's going to be the subject of our radical rant today. We're going to talk about where we've been and where we're going on this podcast. So stay tuned for that. It's coming up at the end of the show. I'll be just reminiscing about the past 700 episodes and maybe what the next 700 will entail. Also on the show today, if you were listening Wednesday, we missed Doug Fine in his Hemp Day Hump Day update. And that's because he was in the meeting, the Oregon Hemp meeting, and it ran late. So he's going to join us today for a special Friday edition of the Hemp Day Hump Day update. And we'll learn all about what's going on in industrial hemp here in my home state of Oregon. Also on the show today, we'll have time to go into the drug war data mines. I covered this a bit on Wednesday, but I got even more data to show you from the TEDS A report. That's the treatment episode data set. Comes from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, and basically tells us about Big Rehab. It's the numbers behind Big Rehab, and we'll show how they cannot survive without marijuana prohibition. Also, we'll go behind the headlines today, where we've got a tragic story to tell you from Florida that reminds us once again to keep your rights. You don't surrender your rights unless you absolutely have to. We'll tell you all about that right after the headlines. And that comes in our cannabis radio news. And in the news today, we've got a significant shift by Jeb Bush on his marijuana policies. We've got tourism in Colorado, and how much does cannabis influence it? Mexico has issued their first permits for marijuana cultivation. California's got San Francisco already looking at marijuana legalization and possibility of decriminalization in the state of Illinois. That's all coming up in the Cannabis Radio News. We've got a big announcement about our news. I'll tell you about that in the Radical Rant. And just briefly here, a personal note. I've been off a couple of days this week, and it was yesterday that I learned that my brother, my little brother, he's 3 years younger than me, so he's turning 45 in just like 3 weeks, may have colon cancer. In fact, the doctors have found a softball-sized mass in the colon. He went in for the CT scans. His liver is clear, but there may be a problem with a lymph node. He's got a little baby boy, well, not toddler, he's 4 years old now, who was born premature, so he's been through that, and now is facing this, and, I had to take a day off. I hope you all understand, and there might be other disruptions in my schedule as we approach the next couple of weeks, but we'll keep you posted. Thanks for all your well wishes, thoughts, and prayers through Facebook and Twitter. I appreciate that, and you know, the good news is he's not opposed to medical cannabis treatments. The bad news is he lives still in Idaho. So I'll keep you posted. I'll let you know what's happening. And hey, if you know anything about RSO, this would be the time to contact me. We're back with the Cannabis Radio News right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
the son of a Polish immigrant who grew up in a Brooklyn tenement. He went to public schools, then college, where the work of his life began, fighting injustice and inequality, speaking truth to power. He moved to Vermont, won election and praise as one of America's best mayors. In Congress, he stood up for working families and for principle, opposing the Iraq War, supporting veterans. Now he's taking on Wall Street and a corrupt political system, funded by over a million contributions, tackling climate change to create clean energy jobs, fighting for living wages, equal pay, and tuition-free public colleges.
People are sick and tired of establishment politics, and they want real change.
Bernie Sanders, husband, father, grandfather, an honest leader, building a movement with you to give us a future to believe in.
I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message.
Your connection to Quality Cannabis Insurance Services is spelled
K-A-E-R-C-H-E-R.
That's Karcher Insurance. We have worked with ventures like cannabis for over 60 years. We're proud to represent over 50 companies with tailor-made cannabis business plans for owners just like you to ensure your product, your plants, and your pursuits.
K-A-E-R-C-H-E-R
spells out their full-service insurance services ranging from commercial to bonds to personal, from life to health, and more. Contact the team at KarcherInsurance.com and let our experience work for you. That's KarcherInsurance.com.
Contact Karen and the team at Karcher Insurance at 1-844-421-3560. That's 844-421-3560.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, December 11th, 2015. Tom Angel at Marijuana.com reports that Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush announced a slight shift in his position on marijuana laws on Friday. Quote, "It's one thing to say we should have decriminalization of marijuana. I support that," end quote, the former governor said in an interview with Joe Matthew of Boston's WBZ News Radio. Bush had not previously endorsed a removal of criminal penalties for cannabis possession. But Bush added that he still opposes full legalization, reiterating how he even voted against a medical marijuana ballot measure that appeared on his state's ballot in 2014, saying, quote, "Marijuana is a gateway drug just as opiates are a gateway drug. Of course it is. Every study shows that," end quote. In point of fact, a comprehensive research assessment by the Institute of Medicine in 1999 found, quote, "There is no conclusive evidence that the drug effects of marijuana are causally linked to the subsequent abuse of other illicit drugs," end quote. Marijuana businesses have long proclaimed that cannabis is drawing visitors to Colorado. Now they have proof. A study commissioned by the Colorado Tourism Office shows legal weed as a growing motivator for trips to Colorado, conflicting with the mantra of tourism officials statewide that savvy marketing alone is responsible for record visitation and spending in the past 2 years. While the state's come-to-life ad campaign is certainly successful, surveys in October and November of potential summertime visitors who were exposed to the state's tourism ads revealed that the marijuana laws influenced vacation decisions nearly 49% of the time. But the survey's director said the questions may not have captured the opinion of people who opted out of Colorado travel because of legal pot. And only 8% of the Colorado tourists who responded to the survey said they visited a marijuana dispensary. Mexican health authorities issued Friday the first permit allowing 4 individuals to grow and smoke their own marijuana, but none actually plans to consume the drug. While the permit opens a crack in Mexico's prohibitionist policies, the government health watchdog COFEPRIS stressed that the authorization is limited to those four people only. The foursome, who secured the authorization in a historic Supreme Court ruling last month, hope that their victory will force Mexico to legalize marijuana. The group, part of the Mexican Society for Responsible and Tolerant Personal Use, says decriminalizing pot will help reduce the country's relentless drug cartel violence. Their legal victory has prompted others to seek similar permits, while forcing President Enrique Peña Nieto and Congress to debate whether to change the country's marijuana laws. COFEPRIS underlined in a statement that under the current laws, marijuana, quote, is still an illegal substance, end quote, and its cultivation and sale remain forbidden. Expecting California voters will legalize recreational marijuana use next year, San Francisco is assembling a task force to propose regulations for the industry, addressing everything from drug potency to where pot businesses can locate. Cancer survivors, those living with HIV, business owners, and medical marijuana dispensary operators were among the 48 applicants vying for 14 seats on the newly created Cannabis State Legalization Task Force. The body will advise the Board of Supervisors on regulating the marijuana industry. On Thursday, after more than 5 hours, the board's rules committee selected 11 people to serve on the task force, postponing a decision on who should serve on three other seats to another day. The full board is expected to approve the task force members next week, and the task force is expected to hold its first meeting in January. There is a move to lower the penalties for people caught with marijuana in Illinois. A new bill would replace criminal penalties with a civil fine for anyone possessing a small amount of pot. While there are already over 100 local ordinances that give police discretion on whether someone should get arrested or a ticket, many state lawmakers say it's time for consistency throughout the entire state. They say low-level criminal marijuana offenses have proved to destroy lives. House Bill 4357 will remove criminal penalties for simple marijuana possession and replace them with a civil fine. For 10 grams or less, the ticket will range from $100 to $200. The House bill is a revamped version of the one that Governor Bruce Rauner amendatory vetoed last year. He asked for changes in the amount of marijuana and fines, and Representative Cassidy is confident the governor will now support it. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, December 11th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
MJWellness.com, the largest medical marijuana community in the world. Connect with thousands of patients, doctors, industry leaders, and businesses through shared personal experiences along our worldwide network. Discover new therapies and benefits with content tailored to you. Come grow your network on MJWellness.com. You're not alone. Your wellness matters. Learn, live, and thrive. Check out MJWellness.com today.
Stupid Prohibition Story.
As a public service, the Russ Belville Show reminds you that smoking marijuana does not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana, and prohibition is always waiting for another victim. Learn your lesson from today's Stupid Prohibition Stories.
With your Stupid Prohibition Stories, I'm old-timey 1920s radio reporter Freddie Farrakh. This just in from Edgewater, Florida, via Fox 59. A man who authorities say was growing marijuana in a Central Florida storage unit panicked when he heard a police helicopter hovering nearby and called 911 to surrender. The problem? Edgewater police officers were in the neighborhood Wednesday afternoon to investigate an unrelated suspicious death. It was shortly after 12:30 p.m. when 47-year-old Jasper Harrison told the dispatcher he was the guy they were looking for, and adding that he wanted to come out without being shot. Harrison told the dispatcher he wanted police to contact him. An officer called and got directions to his storage unit. Police found 150 grams of cultivated marijuana and nine plants inside. Harrison faces charges of growing marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school and intent to sell. It's not known if he has a lawyer. I'm Freddy Farrakh with your stupid prohibition story.
Oh my God. What a sad story. Thanks, Freddy, for that report. So the guy is growing 9 plants in Florida, 150 grams they got cultivated there in a storage unit. Here's a helicopter. And so his first move is to call the cops. You got me. There's a helicopter in the neighborhood. You got me. Oh no. Dude, you know what kind of time you're facing in Florida for cultivation with intent to sell within 1,000 feet of a school? Well, I can tell you, thanks to normal.org, and this is a good tip for you if you want to look up the laws in your state. The website you go to is normal.org/laws/your 2-letter state abbreviation. So, you go to normal.org/laws/FL, and you'll find the link to the state laws of Florida and a bunch of other stuff too. And normal.org's Florida Laws and Penalties page tells me that the cultivation for sale of marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school, college, park, or other specified area is a felony with a potential 15-year sentence and $10,000 fine. 15 years and 10 grand. I think with 15 years hanging over my head, I'm waiting until they actually knock on the door. Right? The helicopter fly, that's not enough. Like, what's the thought process that goes into that? That maybe if I surrender, they'll go light on me? Well, part of the thought process seems to be he didn't want to be killed. He didn't want to be shot. Man, what does that have to say as far... And this is a white guy, by the way, Jasper Harrison. Didn't want to be shot by the cops. But that's kind of telling, isn't it? That's kind of a indictment of America in and of itself, isn't it? Criminal suspects will take into account the idea that cops are going to kill them. Yeah, we better surrender. The cops will kill us otherwise. Ah, what a damn shame for this guy. So let's make sure that Jasper Harrison, wherever you're at, man, get yourself a lawyer. And if you go to normal.org, you can get a lawyer there, too. You definitely need one. Man, 150 grams. That's, what? 6 ounces? 5 ounces? Something like that? We'll find out here in a second. It's 5 1/4 ounces. Yeah. 5 1/4 ounces. Or as we call it here in Oregon, month's supply. No, 5 1/4. You can actually have 8 ounces in your home here in Oregon. But he couldn't have the 9 plants here in Oregon. He can only have 4. So he'd still be in trouble for the plants. And if you have more than 8, it gets into felony territory. So even in Oregon, with 9 plants, he'd be busted. Hey, folks, it's 20 after. That means it's 4:20 in my birth state. This one goes out to my brother. Still back there trapped in Idaho. Get well soon. Ka-choo.
Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. Welcome back, everyone. And today we want to talk about how one in five drug rehab beds is occupied by a pot smoker. The latest report from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration details the extent of drug rehabilitation in the United States. Rehabs that get government funding must report to the Treatment Episode Data Set, which includes admissions, or TEDS-A, and discharges, or TEDS-D. So the TEDS-A report is out for the decade of 2003 to 2013, and so it contains the most recent data on admissions to drug rehab. It spells out what we've all known for a long time. Big rehab cannot survive without marijuana prohibition. I've long reported that most of the people admitted to rehab for marijuana are forced there by the criminal justice system. Tom Angel out at marijuana.com notes that the 2013 figure for marijuana admissions shows that 51.9%, almost 52%, are forced there by the criminal justice system, including parole and probation officers, as well as the courts and prisons. Only 18.1% feel they have enough of a drug dependence to admit themselves for marijuana rehab, compared to over 37% who admit themselves for other drugs. And if you want to compare and contrast this, right, 52% of the people in rehab for marijuana were forced there by the criminal justice system. The next closest in that category is meth at 46.6% and PCP at 43.2%. So, yeah, cops are forcing marijuana consumers to rehabs at a greater rate than meth or PCP users. Amazing. And the other thing is the self-admittance. You know, only 18% of marijuana consumers are there because they self-admitted. They wanted to be there. When you look at crack cocaine, it's 40%. Heroin, it's 58%. Tranquilizers, 46%. Sedatives, 46%. With other drugs with severe addictive potential, people really do want to go and get help. Now, marijuana admits, the people going to rehab, make up 20.6% of all admissions, whether it's their primary drug, secondary, or tertiary drug. So the criminal justice system is placing over half the marijuana users into rehab, works out to over 1 in 10 people in rehab who are forced there for pot, taking up a bed that a real heroin, crack, meth, or alcohol addict should have. Clearly, the marijuana rehabbers, most of them, don't have a problem with marijuana dependence. TEDS-A tells us that 35.5% of marijuana rehabbers didn't smoke pot for a month before entering rehab. Over a third didn't smoke pot at all for at least 30 days before they went to rehab. And another 16.9% used marijuana less than once a week. So, a majority of marijuana rehabbers aren't even weekly tokers. And only one out of four of them, well, it's actually 24.3%, are daily tokers. Consider that these are the stats from the rehabs that receive public money. In order to receive these grants, the rehabs have to show they're accomplishing some measure of rehabilitation. How much simpler is that when one in five of your clients is a pot smoker, half of them don't even toke weekly, and then you threaten them with jail if they don't pass a P-test? These non-addicted individuals can go without weed and appear to be cured from their addiction far easier than creating a success story for an opiate-addicted individual. Rehabs, though, don't characterize their marijuana clients as being non-addicted. No, of course. According to TEDS-A,
76.6% of marijuana rehabbers meet the criteria for substance abuse or dependence, even though over half of them aren't toking weekly, and a third of them aren't toking monthly. But Ted Zay also says that only 69.6% of crack cocaine rehabbers meet that criteria. Are we really supposed to believe that a pot smoker is more likely to be an addict than a crack smoker? Well, part of the criteria that determines dependence is continued use of marijuana despite legal consequences. And the fact that you got forced there by the criminal justice system shows that you've got a dependence problem. It's kind of its own little feedback loop, folks. And the Ted Zay data also destroy the talking point of Project Sam and the other pot prohibitionists who warn that legalization will lead to an increase in marijuana dependence and form a gateway to harder drugs. Well, it turns out that marijuana rehabbers have the lowest average number of drugs admitted for than any other drug but alcohol. There are 45.8% of the marijuana rehabbers there for marijuana alone, and 37.8% are there for marijuana and alcohol, the greatest numbers of any drug. Marijuana legalization, medicalization, and decriminalization may be having an effect on big tobacco's, or big rehab, excuse me, may be having an effect on big rehab's client count. After peaking at over 372,000 admissions in 2009, primary marijuana admissions dropped to 358,000 in 2010, 315,000 in 2012, and are down to 281,000 in 2013. That includes almost 18% fewer 12 to 17-year-olds admitted to rehab, as well as declines in every age demographic except people over the age of 55. It's a start, but only when marijuana is legal nationwide will we see realistic numbers on how many people truly need medical assistance in ending marijuana dependence. It's not like users of legal drugs won't seek rehab when they need it, as evidenced by the one-third of alcohol rehabbers, two-fifths of crack rehabbers, and three-fifths of heroin rehabbers who self-admit, according to Ted Zay. You can get that report from the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration. If you can't find it, send me an email. I'm Radical Russ everywhere, including Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, SoundCloud, YouTube, Periscope. I'm sure there's another one out there.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up!
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping gondrepreneurs grow.
Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, don't reset your clocks, folks. It isn't Hump Day. It is a special Friday edition of the Hemp Day Hump Day update because last Wednesday, a couple days ago, Doug Fine was trapped. He was trapped in the Oregon Hemp Committee Council something hearing. So, Doug, are you there? Hello, Doug? Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry, folks. We try. No answer from Doug Fine once again. I'm so sorry. He was, we had rescheduled for Thursday and then had to take the day off Thursday, and I rescheduled with him again, and I don't know what's going on. I apologize. In the meantime, we'll give you this clip from Deborah Peterson Small's amazing oratory at the drug reform conference, Crystal City, Virginia, last month.
Our next speaker is someone I have an incredible honor to introduce. It's very humbling. She was my boss when I worked at the Drug Policy Alliance for the first time, and so I was able to sit at her feet for 3 years and be amazed by her daily, the way that I'm sure all of you who joined us at the Black Lives Matter town hall were last night with her brilliance. Ms. Deborah Peterson Small is... Thank you. So Deborah Peterson Small is founder and executive director of Break the Chains, a public policy research and advocacy organization committed to addressing the disproportionate impact of punitive drug policies on poor communities of color. It was founded in the belief that community activism and advocacy is an essential component of progressive policy, and works to engage families and community leaders in promoting alternatives to the failed war on drugs by adopting public health approaches to substance abuse and drug-related crime. Please join me in welcoming the amazing Deborah Peterson Small.
Good morning, everyone. Can't tell you how happy I am to be here. I want to start actually by acknowledging the shoulders that I'm standing on, because we did start with the memoriam, and there were three people there who were really important to me being here today. The first one was Dr. Benny Prim. He was one of the first people that I met when I came into this community, and throughout the entire time of my relationship with him, he was more than just an advisor. He was like the father that I didn't have. I could always go to him and talk to him about anything. And I really think it's important for people to get to know who he was and what it was that he contributed, because so many of us are doing work that was based on the things that he started back in the 1960s. The second person is Eddie Ellis, who literally took me to prison. I would not be here doing this work if it was not for him. He identified very early on when I was working for the Civil Liberties Union and going up to Albany that all he needed to do was to bring me to the place where the horrors were happening and then allow the rest to take care of itself. And I love Eddie and I miss him so much. And then finally, someone who wasn't included in that because he died almost a decade ago, but Keith Kyler, one of the founders of Housing Works, was also really, really instrumental in my development as an advocate, as a policy person, and as a fighter. Because Keith lived his life fully as the person he wanted to be, a drug user. He never shied away from that. He never denied that. He never felt ashamed of that. And to me, it's really important, if this movement is really a movement about elevating people who use drugs, that we have at the forefront people who actually use drugs and are not ashamed to say it. I want to pick up where Ethan left off yesterday in talking about the importance of knowing our history. Because for me, you know, I came to this movement because of my belief and commitment to social justice, and I feel like I'm always learning more and more and more about how all these things tie together. So I want you all to go with me on a little history journey. I'm going to go even further back than Damon went. I'm going to go back 400 years, because I think it's important for us to recognize that the Western civilization, of which most of us are a part, was built and funded on the promotion of addiction for profit. I want to repeat that. The Western civilization that we are part of, the Anglo-American enterprise of which the U.S. was the most successful project, was built and financed by promoting addiction for profit to sugar, tobacco, alcohol. The slave trade was developed in order to support the promotion of addiction for profit. Racism was invented to justify the slave trade, which was developed to promote addiction for profit. And here we are, 400 years later, after having built an empire on the backs of people that we got addicted to things so we could make money from them. Now we have a new system of punishing people for the addictions we develop so that we can profit from the punishment. So I want to assert that the greatest addictions that Americans have is not to drugs. Our three biggest addictions are to denial, to punishment, and to the American dream. I'm gonna take a minute on that one, because we talked about that a little bit yesterday, and I just want people to think about this, because we don't actually have critical conversations about the words that we use and what they mean. What is it to be a country that defines itself in terms of a dream, which is by definition not real? Like, really, our whole identity is built up in pursuing something that actually doesn't exist. And if we were real about our history, we would acknowledge that that period of goldenness, wonderful America, only lasted for 30 years. 30 years out of an almost 300-year period, but we've defined our whole identity inside of this 30-year period when everybody seemed to be doing good because the rest of the world was doing bad. That's not sustainable. So one of the messages I have for you all is, like, it's time for us to wake up and live in reality, not in the dream. And in the reality of our system that we're in now, one of the biggest problems that we have is our addiction to consumerism and to believing that we are what we consume. You know, I say that by definition, drug prohibition cannot exist compatible with human rights. It's not possible to have a system based on prohibition that's compatible with human rights, because by practice, it's a policy that requires that you punish people who are involved with drugs. We say that it's a war on drugs, but it's not a war on drugs, it's a war on people. You can't war on the plants, they keep growing no matter what we do. So what really this is a war on people. And it's not a war on people who are doing things that we all agree are problematic. It's a war on people that we don't like, who are doing things that are only problematic because they're doing them. All right? I mean, one of the biggest frustrations that I continue to have as a drug policy reform advocate is the willingness of so many people to feel it's okay to punish those other people for things that they're doing. And that, you know, reform is punishment light. But we never get to the point of, like, actually not talking about punishment. I say that as a society and culture, our relationship with drugs is rooted in hypocrisy, greed, human exploitation. We care more about our ability to be able to punish people than we care about actually preserving their health, than we do about protecting them. So I want to just go over just a few examples of real examples of the ways in which drug policies operate in ways that are dehumanizing. The first one I want to speak to, because I'm a female, is the way in which our policies are directed against women. One of the justifications for adopting these treaties in the first place was that they were going to protect women and children. And yet what we have seen now in the US and in other countries is the stigmatization of women, and particularly of pregnant and parenting women, and the criminalization of their outcomes based on whether or not they use drugs. So in the 80s, it was crack babies. In the 2000s, it's Oxytots. We never talk about poverty as a problem for people's birth outcomes. We never talk about all the legal drugs that people get to use, but we're more than willing to lock up women for that. Second, dehumanizing, drug conspiracy laws, guilt by association. That's why Kemba got sentenced to all that time. They acknowledged that she didn't use drugs. They acknowledged that she didn't sell drugs, but she was guilty because of her association. What kind of dehumanization is that? And one of the consequences of that is that we use those conspiracy laws to force people to tell lies on each other in order to avoid having the majority of their life be spent behind bars. That is dehumanizing. Don't clap, because I only got 3 minutes. Last 2 points, three strikes laws. For me, this is something I really want us to think about, because we not only apply that in sentencing, we apply that in treatment, we apply that in schools, and we never ask ourselves, where the hell did three strikes come from? It's a baseball metaphor. Why do you have strikes in baseball? Because there is no clock. I'm serious, don't laugh. There's no clock in baseball, so the purpose of balls and strikes is to add some level of boundary and finality to an otherwise untimed game. But people are not like baseball. We're more like football and basketball, because our clock starts running from the moment that we're born. We are finite people. So we need to think about what it means to apply a sports metaphor that's designed in that context to people. To people's lives, to say three strikes, you're out. What the hell does that mean? And we actually don't even critically examine how we came up with that, how we're applying it, and what it actually means. Now, I know I'm running out of time, so I'm gonna go to my last 2 points real quick, which is, what is drug policy reform? This is, again, a point where history has to teach us something. In the same way that ending legal slavery did not equate with black freedom, ending mass incarceration is not the same as actually removing all the shackles, et cetera, that drug policies have placed on people of color. Okay, we need to actually think about what is the role that the drug war has played. It has been the space to continue to allow the economic, political, and social oppression and exploitation of people in general, but black and brown people in particular. So if our reform is not changing that power relationship, if all we're doing is taking off people's physical chains and putting them in the economic chains of having to pay for the privilege of not going to prison so that somebody else gets to profit, that's not real reform. And for all of you pot entrepreneurs out there, my question to you is, are you going to be a parasite or a social engineer? Are you going to use your money to keep sucking the blood out of our community, or are you actually going to be part of the solution of applying reparations? And yes, I said that word, because goddammit, I am done with the idea of people having policies that screw over people for decades, and then one day they say, oh wow, we've come enlightened, my bad, and all of a sudden it's all good. And we're still left with the scars. We're still left with the hurt. We're still left with all of the damage that has been done. You guys owe us, and I'm here to collect. See you.
That was the amazing Deborah Peterson Small at the International Reform Conference. She is the founder of Break the Chains, a fantastic reform group. And she was clearly the speech of the day, standing ovation. And I'll never forget some of the concepts she taught me. We're back with the rant right after this.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at The Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get The Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on The Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read The Weed Blog today.
You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
As we reported, the California Adult Use of Marijuana Act, or the AUMA, also known as the Sean Parker Initiative to legalize marijuana, has now become the de facto frontrunner in the state of California. The organization that had put forth its own activist-supported initiative under the banner Reform California has moved to withdraw its measure, and a majority of the board has now endorsed the AUMA. Securing those endorsements required a few amendments to the AUMA that I have now analyzed and notated in my updated hyperlinked text of the California Adult Use of Marijuana Act. That's available through my Scribd account at scribd.com, or you can go to marijuanapolitics.com. It's my latest post up there, and there should be a link to it. But here are some of the highlights, and I've gotten some updates, by the way, that I'm going to have to fix in the printed text, so I'll get to that after the show. But first of all, adult public possession. You're allowed to possess 1 ounce of flower and 8 grams of concentrate. And I was confused by this because there was two different sections. One section that said that it was lawful to possess, for adults over 21, to possess up to 8 grams of concentrate. And that was a change from the original act, which only had 4 grams of concentrate. But then there's another section that says there's punishment for over 4 grams. What I wasn't getting in that is that was there to make it so there was punishment for people 18 to 20 who have more than 4 grams. And then if you're over 21, it's 8 grams that you're allowed. So I'll get that fixed in the text of the article. 1 ounce of flour, 8 grams of concentrate. So a little more than a quarter ounce of concentrate. Adult home grows. You're allowed 6 plants and all of the harvest that you produce from those plants. Localities cannot ban your indoor personal grow, but may ban personal grows outdoors. However, landlords can ban your personal grow and even possession within their properties. Also, keep in mind that's 6 plants per residence, not 6 plants per adult. So that's, you know, you live with 3 other roommates, and that doesn't matter. You're still going to be busted if you have more than 6 plants in that house. And for information on this, let's see if that website will come up. No, anyway. Also, you are allowed to possess at the grow all of the marijuana you harvest from the 6 plants. So keep that in mind. It has to be at the grow. Public toking is prohibited. That includes any place with a no smoking sign, any place you can be seen in public, any place within 1,000 feet of a school if it can be seen or smelled, or while driving or riding in a vehicle. However, pot lounges are possible under the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. A locality can allow for the on-site consumption of marijuana in a specially designated public place. Use in private limos, buses, flights, and cruises might be allowed as well. Maybe not flights, because that's all federal. So, deliveries are allowed. While localities can ban deliveries within their jurisdiction, they cannot ban deliveries through their jurisdiction. Hash oil blasting is illegal. You have to have a license to make concentrates using any volatile solvents, and violating that can be a felony with 3 to 5 to 7 years, depending on circumstances. Employers can still piss test you for your job, but they don't have to. Marijuana licensing begins on January 1st, 2018. Included in the licenses are five cultivation licenses. There'll be type one. Those licenses run up to 5,000 square feet. Type two is up to 10,000 square feet. Type three is up to 22,000 square foot indoors or 1 acre outdoors. Type four are for nurseries that provide seeds, seedlings, and immature plants. Type five are farms over 22,000 square foot indoors or over 1 acre outdoors. Also included are type six, non-volatile solvent product manufacturers, type seven, volatile solvent product manufacturers, type eight, testers, type 10, distributors, type 11, retailers, and type 12, micro businesses. Now, there are no type 9 licenses, but that's presumably reserved for future nonprofit licenses. A licensee may hold multiple licenses of any type, except that testers can only be testers. That seems fair, right? Marijuana taxation. There will be a 15% excise tax on marijuana products, plus a $9.25 per ounce cultivation tax on flower, plus a $2.75 per ounce cultivation tax on leaves, plus any state and local sales taxes, plus counties may institute a separate tax, but that's subject to a vote of the people. Taxes will cover regulatory costs first, then $10 million will go to public universities, $10 million to businesses and economic development, $3 million to the California Highway Patrol, $2 million to the University of California San Diego Medical Marijuana Research, and then the remainder will be divvied up 60% to drug youth education and prevention, 20% to environmental protection, and 20% to law enforcement. There will be a seed-to-sale tracking system implemented. Commercial marijuana plants will have to have unique ID tags in a seed-to-sale tracking system. Microbusiness licensing, there'll be a special license class for small-scale artisan growers who are their own distributors, non-volatile solvent manufacturers, and retailers. There will be a 5-year moratorium on mega grows. This was one of the big amendments to the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, and it requires that those type 5 cultivation licenses, the indoor grows over 22,000 square feet or outdoor grows over 1 acre, they cannot be issued until the year 2020. Inspections of licensees. There was also amendments added that took out broad language that allowed inspections at any time by almost any authority, and they were replaced by reasonable time and manner requirements and limiting who qualifies as a peace officer who can conduct those inspections. And the previous Adult Use Act had this incentive to prosecute. It allowed local prosecutors to collect all the bounty from prosecuting violations of the act, all the fines and the court costs and so forth. Amendments added now restrict local prosecutors to collecting reimbursements for prosecution, with the rest of the bounty going to the general fund. There are also licensing limits. Localities can set what a reasonable ratio of licensees to population may be, or completely ban licensees altogether. Licensees must be a minimum of 600 feet from schools, but localities can set greater buffer sizes. California residency as of 2015 is required until 2020. Then there'll be no residency requirement. Existing medical marijuana licensees get priority in licensing, again, until 2020, and then it's anybody's game. These amendments were added mostly to try to protect the existing industries. And certain previous convictions can result in license denial, except if it's a marijuana-related offense, there can be a waiver. Kind of, there's a process for getting past that. There are advertising and marketing limits. Marijuana can't be advertised to kids. Ads can't use cartoon characters or anything appealing to kids. Ads can't be on mediums with less than 71.6% adult audience. Ads can't be within 1,000 feet of schools or where kids play, and cannot be on billboards near roadways that cross state borders. Also, retailers can't give away marijuana as part of a promotion. There are strong environmental protections within the Adult Use of Marijuana Act. California agencies regulating fish, wildlife, forests, water, and other natural resources have some authority over marijuana licensing, and environmental laws must be obeyed by licensees. there are consumer protections. Marijuana will be tested and labeled for cannabinoid content and contaminants. Regional appellations like Humboldt Grown or Emerald Triangle will be protected, and state organic certification will be available. Warning labels will advise against use by minors, pregnant or breastfeeding women, and drivers or operators of heavy machinery. And edibles will be limited to 10 milligrams of THC per serving. Prior marijuana crimes can be expunged. There are processes enabled to allow individuals in prison on marijuana charges to get their sentences reduced or eliminated if their crime is now legal or just an infraction or a misdemeanor. Those with criminal records who serve their time also have a path to getting their records sealed and dismissed. Medical marijuana parental rights are protected. An amendment was made to protect visitation and custody and other parental rights of medical marijuana users, but apparently no such protection for parents exists for personal marijuana use. Industrial hemp will now be treated as an agricultural crop, which may be grown on no less than 1/10 of an acre and may not be individually pruned or culled. I think this is to dissuade the whole, you know, growing hemp and then trying to harvest it for CBD. Legislative tinkering. The act may be amended by a majority of the legislature to lessen penalties or further the intent and purposes of the act, but they'll need a 2/3 majority to make it stricter in any way. And there are still many other initiatives filed at the California Secretary of State, but with the backing of the most prominent activists and money from people like Sean Parker, the Napster billionaire, Justin Hartfield, the Weed Maps millionaire, and the Pritzker family, the billionaire Hyatt Hotel heirs, the Sean Parker initiative is the heavy favorite to make the ballot in 2016 to legalize marijuana in California. I've already heard some complaints from people online about various aspects of the Sean Parker initiative. We'll discuss that more in depth coming up in our next hour. That's Toker Talk Radio. Stay tuned for that. Our phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. Also, don't forget Stoner Jesus comes up at the top of the next hour, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Get your comedy on with Stoner Jesus, one of the most hilarious and naughty shows on CannabisRadio.com. For those of you watching the Ustream webcam and listening the first hour, that's all the time we got for today. So thanks for joining us. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com and Rolla J Studios in beautiful legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.